Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, mostly on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 10K Collective podcast, the place for six, seven and eight figure sellers. That may not even be high enough for our guest today. Brad Moss is an Amazon superstar. He is the CEO of Product Labs, which is one of the largest Amazon consulting and technology companies in the world. He's also the foremost business lead of Amazon Seller Central platform itself, the very ground we walk on as Amazon sellers, and the creator of the Amazon Seller app as well, which pretty much all of us have used forever. So, obviously, the man talks about high-level strategies, and that's what we're going to do today. So, Brad, warm welcome to the show.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Michael. Super happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to get you. I mean, you're a busy chap to pin down. It's been a while in the making, as everyone says at the beginning of podcasts. So I shouldn't say that's very boring. Yeah. But obviously, from your curriculum vitae or your resume, depending which side of the pond you're on, you have an incredibly strong background. So, we're not going to say any more about that because I think it speaks for itself. But we are going to plunge into our first episode of two episodes where we're going to talk about strategy, because I believe that that is one of the focuses that we want to focus on here, because the tactical side is getting more and more commoditized. Obviously, you've got a good execution, but execution plus great strategy is obviously going to beat just a great execution. So tell me a little bit about your approach to strategy, and how does the word strategy, what does that even mean, without getting too broad, but within relevance to e-commerce sellers?
Yeah. So strategy to me means planning for the future. you don't necessarily know what's going to happen in the future. People talk about strategy, they throw the word out all the time. And it's really planning for what you don't know is going to happen. I mean, business is the art of dealing with the unknown, right? Is you don't know what's going to happen, and you have to get all as many odds in your favor as possible. Now, I actually often think about chess. I used to teach chess when I was back in college. And I used to think with chess, you have to know like every single move that your opponent would make, right? It's like, oh, I got to know 5 moves ahead or 10 moves ahead, whatever. But then after teaching it, I actually realized that chess is more about setting your pieces up where you have the most options for attack or defense possible. And that's how you keep moving. So your strategy is all about creating the most opportunity for yourself or the most defensibility for yourself, wherever you're going to be inside chess. And I think that's a great analogy with business in general is I may not know what's going to happen, but if I take this step, it's going to create probably 4 more opportunities for me in the future versus if I do this one, it's a single opportunity for me.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you have the job of also writing the show notes for this, by the way. Folks, just go to 10K Collective, 10K Collective.com for notes here, because you're going to want to take notes from this man. Very thought-provoking. So we're already plunging deep into business strategy. I love this. I really, really like that you're differentiating, like a lot of the top strategy thinkers that I admire, people like Richard Koch. You have a nice knack of keeping it really simple. And he's also made himself a ton of money by applying his own strategies rather than writing books about it. He's written books after making a shedload of cash. Like, he's worth about $300 billion roughly at the time of recording, like serious money. So I don't know how many figures that is, man, like 13 or something. But what you're saying is you're not about planning and anticipating every single move, because that would drive you mad and the computational power required would be insane. But it's about keeping options open. So it's more like strategy on the chessboard. If you're visualizing it, in my mind, it's more like dominating the center, for example, is a classic strategy, isn't it? In a simplistic sense, getting your queen out not too early, because it's a very valuable piece that could be attacked, but getting it out at the right point where when the board is freer, it can move around more, that sort of stuff, right? I guess I'm a pretty poor chess player, but I love the game. In other words, I guess positioning is a word that comes together with the word strategy, isn't it? It's being in a position from which you can make tactical plays easily, right? Is that a fair summary?
I think that is. I think it's a really good comparison there.
Yeah, I really like chess comparison. So obviously, like all metaphors, it's going to work great for the people who know chess, and the people who don't, it's going to be bad. So we ought to think of it.
If you don't know chess, I mean, it's the game's so old, you better go learn chess.
Yeah, go learn chess, folks. Yeah. Okay, so in practical terms then, how does that translate? I mean, this is like a 50,000-foot view question, but I'm okay with that because we can plunge into detail later. But how does that translate? Let's say you're working with, I know you work with some very serious sellers, like people doing over $100 million a year or whatever. How does that translate for, say, the 7- or 8-figure seller?
Yeah, for sure. So, and let me preface all of it that we use numbers and metrics to back up everything we're doing. And that's how I did it at Amazon, right? Is what was unique about kind of the role that, you know, I got into at Amazon was I was in the world of creating businesses for Amazon. I mean, I wasn't running these businesses. Well, I ran them after, but I wasn't just an operator. I wasn't, you know, just helping other people sell and all sorts of things. And there's different values that people gained from those opportunities. But from my perspective, I was in the world of creating new businesses for Amazon. How do you create a business? What are the things that you look at, and how do you structure from a metrics and technical perspective of, is this a healthy business? Is it going to be $1 million? Is it going to be $1 billion? It's going to be $100 million? And what are the metrics that you care about? So I got a lot of hands-on, no training, but a lot of hands-on action and working inside of Amazon about creating these large businesses and the metrics and the systems around running a business and making it very healthy. And so we use metrics in kind of all the things we do. And to more directly answer your question, it's when for a 7- or 8-figure seller, when we're talking about strategy, you don't just look at your product and say, hey, all right, my sales this week were 30,000. What's this tactic I'm going to do to get to 35,000? And what's this tactic I'm going to do in 2 weeks to get to 40,000? It's you roll all of that back and you say, okay, this year or last year, I did $4 million or I did whatever the number is, $4 million. Next year, I want to grow to $8 million. Now, okay, if I want to grow to $8 million, let's actually back into that with all the metrics. Well, if I take my existing listing, do I think I can grow it? What's a realistic growth rate of my existing listings? Is it a pretty competitive category, so I'm probably going to stay where I am? Or do I need to grow it? Or maybe I can grow it by 20%. Okay, great. There's 20%. How am I going to get that extra 80%? Well, maybe I have to develop new products and put more products in my catalog. But you got to plan that long before then you're actually doing it, because as everyone knows, it takes a while to get a new product. And then you got to look at the failure rate of your potential products. And so you may actually create a full plan, a 12-year plan that says, okay, I'm at 4 million. I want to get to 8 million. That means I need to launch another 30 products. I'm planning on 50% of those failing, 20% doing okay, and 30% doing really well. And if those ones do really well, if I launch them within 6 months, that's going to mean an extra 80, you know, $4 million that I'm going to hit by the following year. So it's a lot of the strategy is looking at what you want to be doing, and then you back into the plan to create that. Some of the more technical kind of strategic side of things that come along is when you start looking at different markets and different opportunities of those markets and saying, well, here's this market. It's not, you know, here's all these competitors. A lot of them are cheap competitors, or a lot of them are high price competitors. Is there room for a middle price competitor in this market? And if I came in, what are the unique features I would need to put into my product to do that? That's a lot of the, you know, when you're actually diving into the product selection component itself, and there's some really interesting strategies that you can do there when you're looking at the market itself. But hopefully at least I've spurred some thoughts and ideas about how you would go about strategy, because it is different for every business. Every business has their own strengths. Amazon's a platform, a lot of different tactics on Amazon, but really the high level strategy should be the same regardless of what platform you're selling on. If it's e-commerce, you just got to know the strengths of e-commerce in your business inside of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so let's try and dig a little bit more into the sorts of detail, because I've been reading a great book and by Nicholas Nassim Taleb, if I've got his name right, who wrote famously Black Swan. I say famous amongst very, very nerdy people like myself. Apparently, Jeff Bezos made it obligatory reading for his senior management team. I don't know if you were forced to read it, but
interesting.
But it's really, it's high level stuff. I mean, it deals with I'm going to get the word wrong now. Ontology, I think. No, it's not even that. It's a specialist area of philosophy which deals with how do we know what we know and that stuff, which sounds like a ridiculous thing that should belong in university. And maybe it should. But again, he's one of those people that made himself rich. You know, he got FU money, as he puts it, by being an options trader, which is a very metrical driven and statistics driven thing, right? Even more than Amazon selling, if it's possible. And then retired and wrote a load of books about it, which I respect more than somebody who just writes books about business theory. But one of the things he deals with is dealing with uncertainty, but also he talks about the fact that mistakes are actually, you know, not doing the wrong thing are more important and more solid ground than aiming to do the right thing, which is an interesting kind of counterintuitive approach. So let's start with mistakes. What mistakes do you see your clients making? And I guess if we have failed to make these mistakes, stay away from these, we're more likely to succeed. What are the classic errors in the sort of strategy level in e-commerce and specifically the Amazon space?
A lot of things that I've seen is people relying on one method that they've learned. You know, there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of people who've had success with one method, and then they say and they swear on that method and say, hey, you have to do this. It's the only way to win on Amazon. And then people rely put their whole business on that one method, and then it doesn't work. What I learned early days, probably when I was still at Amazon, is someone would try the exact same method on two different products and it didn't work, right? It worked on one and didn't work on the other. Many times people, they jump to conclusions and trying to simplify this very complicated system by saying, this is all you got to do. All you need are reviews. You know, reviews are the only thing you should care about. And that's all that matters. Now, we actually have a formula where we break down the whole Amazon selling business the way we broke down businesses, the way I would break down a new business inside of Amazon. We look at conversion rate and we look at traffic. I mean, those are two, conversion rate times traffic equals unit sales, right? So under conversion rate, we consider there's four different areas that matter as you start looking at it. And reviews is one of those four, right? Reviews matter for your conversion rate. That's all really they matter for. And your price point also impacts your conversion rate. And so do your images and so do your text, right? And so on the reviews piece, now I don't want to diminish the importance of reviews, trying to make a point. Reviews are extremely important. And there's actually some strategy with having really good, strong reviews with the business that you can do. But a lot of people just obsess on just reviews when, you know, we've gotten a business to $1 million run rate within 6 weeks with zero reviews. It had zero reviews at the time, right? It's like, oh, well, that's counterintuitive to everything that everyone's ever told me about Amazon. And it's because, you know, people are looking at these one little tactics or looking at things kind of in a vacuum. In their world, and they work, and it's great, and they work for some people, and that's awesome. And what we're trying to do is look at it from a larger perspective, because we need a framework and structure to handle 100 different businesses or more that we're running, and that's, you know, it could be in 100 different categories or whatever different niche and genre. I mean, people ask us, do we specialize in one thing or another? No, because we've actually set a really good framework that works no matter what category we're in, and so that's our perspective.
That's pretty amazing. That's a pretty extraordinary achievement, by the way. And we're talking businesses, some of them doing over $100 million a year. So, I mean, that's an amazing thing. So I'll just point out and jump in there and say, if you want to get this framework, folks, or a version of it, you can get a free PDF at amazingfba.com/framework. Sounds like a bit of a silly thing to call it just framework. I mean, but it's hopefully memorable enough for you to go grab it. And look, if you've just heard what the man said, and you know Brad's background, and you're in any way serious about Amazon, you're already clicking on that link, if I were you. I'm just saying, because anything that can achieve that is extraordinary. So backing up then, trying to get some solid ground amongst all the metrics and favorite obsessions, as you say, reviews, you know, ranking and reviews are the favorite obsessions of mastermind groups that I've sat in, and you know, whether it's, fortunately, not the 10K collective that I run, and we're broader with that, but in a lot of the time it gets down to that discussion. So for you, conversion rate and traffic are the pillars kind of metrics. Is that right, or is that just too simplistic?
No, that's it. So we have an equation. It's on the revenue side, those are the two that matter. There's actually another side called cost, and that's if you're making money or not. and there's other components on that side. Yeah. But on the revenue side, which everyone loves to talk about and focus on, which is, it's kind of the sexy side of things, right? Those are the two that we care about.
So I know that you mentioned to me when we chatted before we came to the show that a classic error is failure to plan. And they say, okay, failure to plan is fail. There's a cliche. Is that true? How does it manifest itself, if so?
So in the early days of Amazon, you didn't need a plan at all. I mean, you could, my very first product inside of Amazon, they actually said we could, they suggested, hey, go sell stuff. And it helped me with my job. And my wife was looking around with some stuff to sell, and she found something on Etsy that she liked, and she was going to manufacture it. So we just bought it, and then we resold it on Amazon, and it sold within like 2 or 3 days. And there was no advertising. There was nothing. And I was like, wow, this platform's powerful, right? Like, who are we? And what is, why would someone buy this product? I took a picture with my cell phone. Now that everyone's done that, right? And the whole, the kind of land grab has happened inside of Amazon. So now it's more about real estate development, right? So it's, you know, the land grabs happened, and now you need to, so you can't just do the rushing and not planning anymore. You need to start planning about what you're doing, start thinking longer term and thinking, okay, if this happens, if this doesn't happen, what's my backup plan? How can I pivot these different products if I need to? Or what's my product group makeup going to be? You know, I can't just sell one product. I'm not just going to be selling, I don't know, whatever the top products are, my banana slicer, right? I can't just sell my banana slicer and make $1 million on that anymore. Maybe I got to think about 2 or 3 different areas that I want to flesh out of my brand. And how do I boost my brand with the selling of these other products and create a larger strategy around that?
Okay, so what I'm getting is thinking longer term, having backup plans and being able to pivot. So obviously that having a set of products that has something to do with each other makes you a more sellable brand, obviously, and then has some kind of coherence in the storefront and all the rest. So tell me a bit more about this pivot idea, because that's less commonly talked about. I mean, I think one of the reasons entrepreneurs, and that includes me, I mean, I'm you know, nothing like as successful as I'm fortunate to work with a lot of clients who are killing it and doubling revenue every year from a standing start or from good numbers already. They've got a healthy, I would say, healthy skepticism of planning and theory, because often the plan and the reality don't coincide very well. So how do we bridge that gap? Because let's talk about the pivot thing, because I think that's really critical. It comes back to the thing you said right at the top of the show, which is, you know, it's like chess. It's not about seeing forward 10 moves, like planning to the nth degree, like a computer would. But it's using your human intuition and experience to go, I need to leave my options open. And generally, this kind of strategy leaves more options open. So how does that interact with a plan? Because obviously a plan in theory is rigid, and an improvisation based on options is not. So how's the interaction between those two? And it's a hell of a question, I realize, you know.
No, it is, because it's actually a really, really complicated component here. Not necessarily complicated, it just takes a lot of thought. So I'll do my best to kind of answer, but I think there's some additional thoughts here that I'm not considering. But when you're talking about pivoting, so the first thing that comes to mind for me that I've seen is, you get into a category, you're trying to sell, you're getting a little bit of traction, but maybe your conversion rate is really low. And then people instantly jump to, well, it's because my reviews are bad, or I don't have enough reviews, which is true. That's one of the inputs, right? But there could be some other components about your product that are driving your conversion rate down. You might start looking at your images that you've chosen to show and support your product. You might need to take a different angle. Understanding who that customer is that's coming to your product. Is this, there's all sorts of, you know, segmentations and groups of who your customers are. That's actually another side of our business that we help companies understand is who their customer is on Amazon. But even without any of the data behind it, trying to get some information about who are these people buying my product and how can I market it or show these images that might change their perspective on it, right? I don't know if you've ever heard of the Squatty Potty. Right.
I haven't had the pleasure. I have now. I feel slightly soiled, but you know, we'll deal with it.
Look up the Google video. That was an amazing Google video. But like, their marketing approach is genius in just making it about the silly unicorn in the video. And it's pretty funny, but it's genius in how they just changed the dynamic of how they're marketing their product. So that might be one thing, right? Is looking about. And Amazon, really, your source, they have infinite store shelf space. So it's all about your images of how you're showing your product. And maybe you got to show it a different way, different lifestyle images. Hey, are people, you know, am I going to show the same like happy couple on the beach walking for my lifestyle image? Or maybe my lifestyle image should be something more integrated into someone's life, right? Like maybe like a dad helping his son, you know, because he got hurt. I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing random ideas. that's where the creative side comes from, to maybe pivot how you're presenting that product. Another interesting thing in that we've seen with the market on Amazon is it used to be everyone, in terms of pricing, everyone used to rush to the bottom. And Amazon's all about trying to push price down because customers want cheaper things, right? Now, that's filling up. And as the whole marketplace is filling up, there's actually opportunity for price at the top of the market also, and not just the bottom. If you look at Apple products, you know, those things are made really cheaply. Well, not cheaply. They're made for a cost-effective price, and they're just, their multiples are crazy high. But people are spending a lot of money on these little things because the brand is so strong. And so there is this idea of, hey, I want to be the premium brand in this space. And there might be room for a premium brand in your space when you've come in low. Or typically what really happens is someone comes in high and they say, hey, we want to be premium. And maybe they can't be premium, or their images aren't displaying that as premium well enough, or consumer, or the product itself is just not good enough. So what's your backup? What's your pivot of, well, maybe we should do another version of this product where we can make it slightly cheaper and come in the middle of the market, or have a low cost version of this that could then lead people to the high cost version of what it is.
Really glad you said that, because I had to sort of bite my tongue when you said the premium positioning is the aim, because wow, the number of people, I mean, it's mostly people who are starting out from raw, but it's not always. It's like the number of people that aim for premium positioning and fall flat on their faces has just been frightening to me. Because Amazon, I mean, Jeff Bezos says, I'm preaching the converted to with you, but just to remind people what the man says. Okay, for years, he's very consistent about this. I'm sure you got this drummed into you at Amazon. Customers want three things: lower prices, greater selection, quicker delivery. Amazon takes care of the delivery. Unfortunately, greater selection is terrible for us as sellers, and lower prices is terrible as well. But there is a downwards price on Amazon. Now, of course, there's a whopping range of price points, which includes premium, but my experience is that you have to have really strong brand recognition to get premium prices, which is not a surprise, right? But how have you found that with the more serious brands? Because I've seen that a lot with newbies, less so with more established brands. But how does that aiming for premium but pivoting game look with the, say, you know, $100 million sellers, or even the 10 million, 20 million, 30 million level?
Yeah, so what's really hard is that you need to, for the premium branding and premium pricing, you actually have to be really good at branding the products. And I mean, you know, getting agencies and photos and things that are done extremely well, because you can tell. I mean, there's usually like that 20 to 10% difference between someone who's good and someone who's really good at that branding. And we found when someone can come in with something really good, then that helps. That definitely helps with the premium. Getting reviews around your product help the premium price point. And then, you know, good copy on your page and good EBC, that also helps. I mean, that's the presentation to the consumer. At some point, the reviews totally matter of, hey, this might be, you know, two times expensive as everyone else, but it only has three stars. So everyone's, you know, so then the social reassurance is super low in that scenario.
So have you actually, though, seen people, this is the bit that I find I haven't seen it happening that much, although occasionally, that people want to create a premium brand purely via Amazon. But my experience is that the brands that you actually, when you buy on Amazon, if as a consumer, or if you look at behavior of your research in the markets, the brands that actually command a serious brand premium have earned it because they spent a lot of money or a lot of effort off Amazon, maybe on Instagram these days, if they're really, really niched in and it's the right demographic. So it tends to be younger, fashion, very obviously famous for that, more female demographic traditionally, etc. That's mutating fast. TV ads, even in some cases, obviously there are some brands that have an awful Amazon listing where they sell at a great, probably convert well, we don't get that data. And certainly the price point's high, because they've got the off Amazon brand. So how realistic is it to just build a brand purely within the Amazon platform and get solid pricing, in your opinion?
So we've done it. We've done it multiple times, but I would say it's, for the mass businesses out there, it's probably the exception and not the norm from what I've seen. And we've tried to help identify, you know, what are the things that we've done that's really helped establish that. And a lot of it does come down to the category and then the detail page and how well we established that and how good we made it look for those clients. But yeah, it typically is the opposite way. Now, here's an interesting point. Now, I don't know if this wouldn't necessarily be the audience listening to the podcast, but if you have a brand that's not on Amazon and you've been doing marketing for years, and you know, whether you're a big company, $100 million company or more, or you're a small company and or a medium-sized company, and you're thinking about coming on Amazon, that's actually a strategic advantage that you have. All the marketing you've been doing off of Amazon and the years of history, that's still going to help you on Amazon. What's been happening to those companies, they've got their lunch handed to them, lunch eaten by these smaller sellers who've come on and built their own brands and established some really good products and really good brands on Amazon because there was a void in the market. Now, these bigger guys, actually, there's still opportunity for sure for them to come in Amazon and do a really good job and get a lot of sales on Amazon. I mean, the entire marketplace is growing, right? So it's more pie for everyone to share. And not being on Amazon means you lose out on roughly 50% of your sales, right? Or your e-commerce sales.
So I guess what you're saying is that the exception to the norm, being able to build it on Amazon only. And thank you for being honest about that. I'm sure, like, you know, some with your abilities and your team behind, you know, the quality of people you've got access to, photographers, image marketing, statistics you can draw on, you know, it makes sense that if anyone's going to be able to do it, it's you, but it is hard. And thank you for being honest about that. And as you say, yeah, I think there's a huge opportunity for people who've got an existing brand. I know a couple of the businesses that I've got in a mastermind, one of which is killing it on Amazon, and they've got a very, very established off Amazon brand. I mean, it was even offline years ago. And then there's another one which has got a very strong history. And I remember speaking to the guy who owns the company, very, very long history, like 100 years. And he said, oh, we might be getting out of XYZ category, and XYZ, I should say. And I said, please don't, because you've got an incredible brand and you have incredible supply chain depth, knowledge and quality and all the rest. So he's an interesting person who's trying to transition into the Amazon world. And I think can afford to leverage that existing brand hugely more. And that's always interesting to me. I guess you must see that a lot with your agency, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we see a lot of companies, big brands, even offshoots of big companies, like, hey, let's launch this product on inside of Amazon. That's been doing well other places, and we just want to get it into Amazon. And it will do well inside of Amazon when they do, if they do it right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million US or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.